welcome to the Development Podcast, coming to you from the World Bank in Washington, D.C. and around the world. I'm Raka Banerjee alongside Paul Blake.
Today, the locust swarms that are wreaking havoc across large swaths of Africa and the Middle East.
This really started about 2 years ago this week, and it started with a very rare cyclone that hit in the Arabian Peninsula.
As fields are being decimated, we're asking how it will affect people's ability to eat and what it means for their livelihoods.
If we only look at the Horn of Africa, there are already around 22 million people who are severely food insecure. So a crisis that, like the locust, will only exacerbate the situation.
All that and more from our team of experts and analysts coming up over the next few minutes. But first, Raka, take us through the data.
Say, as I was looking into the data around locusts and the damage that they can do, I was honestly pretty horrified.
Yeah, I mean, as I was researching this episode, I saw some video online of some of these swarms, and it's really shocking stuff. But anyway, continue. Tell me about some of the things you found in the data.
So I was looking at, you know, info from the FAO, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, and I learned that a locust eats its own weight in food per day, which is only about 2 grams, right? Doesn't sound like that much. But then you multiply that by the size of the swarms, you know, a single square kilometer swarm can contain 40 to 80 million locusts, and that swarm would eat as much as 35,000 people.
Wait, those swarms that like just one that's like one square kilometer. They're eating as much as 35,000 people in a single day.
That's right. And, you know, that's just one square kilometer. So imagine a swarm the size of Paris. It would eat the same amount of food as half the entire population of France.
In a single day.
In a single day.
That's honestly terrifying. I'm trying to wrap my head around that, the sort of geography of that. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah. And then on top of that, I was looking at statistics about food insecurity and about subsistence agriculture in Africa.
Yeah. And remind us, you know, about that. What are some of those numbers that we need to know?
So the food insecurity alone that's resulting from this locust crisis is a catastrophe, given the high levels of food insecurity that we are already seeing in East Africa. You know, from looking at the World Bank's data site, this is from a few years ago, as of 2017, nearly 20% of the population of Kenya was severely food insecure.
Kenya is just one example. I mean, there's several other countries, as far as I know from my research, there's several other countries that are being affected by this. But for those of us, before we go a little further, just so we don't get lost here, for those of us who aren't data geeks like you, remind us what exactly food insecure means. Is that the same thing as someone who is starving or famished necessarily?
No, not exactly. Food insecure means that people don't have enough food in order to be able to live an active and healthy life. And it has to do with the level of nutrition as well, in terms of being able to have normal growth and development. And that's according to the FAO. The FAO, again, they are estimating that by the second half of this year, more than 42 million people in the countries affected by the locusts could face severe acute food insecurity.
Yeah, I mean, that's really depressing to hear. I mean, it seems kind of obvious, but it's still that when you start to see those numbers, it becomes just very stark, the situation with locusts. And I've spent a little bit of time in Kenya, and my sense is that agriculture is a really significant sector to the economy there and possibly across the African continent, right? So not just, you know, it's not just the food security situation at hand, it's also as agriculture gets damaged, as it gets decimated, it could have some knock-on effects that aren't just food security related.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, it's the entire economy, really, so that's being affected. There's the people who drive trucks but who won't have crops to haul, the people that would process the raw crops and prepare them for market. You know, there's just so many people affected in this entire chain. And overall, the World Bank is estimating that the total economic loss as a result of this locust crisis in the Horn of Africa, which also includes Yemen, they're estimating that it could be as high as $8.5 billion just this year alone.
I mean, the thing about this, and you know, sorry everyone to have a fairly depressing episode, but it's just, I mean, all of these numbers are super depressing. Is there any sort of bright spot here? Is there any silver lining? Is there any good news in all of these statistics and all of this research you've been doing?
So there was one thing that I found that was actually pretty encouraging. Keith Cressman, he is the senior locust forecasting officer at the FAO. He's been working with NOAA, you know, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration here in the U.S.
And they're the weather people here in the U.S.
They're the weather people. That's right. Yeah. So together they are developing a web app that can forecast where the wind is going to blow locusts after they take flight. And that's a pretty wide radius because they can fly up to almost 100 miles a day. So being able to predict where they'll land next is really crucial for early warning systems. And then basically local authorities can apply pesticide treatments to prevent crop losses. So that's one bright spot.
I was going to say that's pretty good to hear. But look, thank you so much for sharing all of this background, all of this data. That will help us understand a bit more as we head into the next interview.
Well, the statistics behind the locust crisis are grim, but the situation is grabbing global attention. For its part, the World Bank has launched a huge $500 million program focused on getting immediate help to the farmers, herders, and rural households that are the most affected. To find out more, we sent Paul to chat with two World Bank experts who have been instrumental in creating the program: Afra Alamadi, the World Bank's Senior Social Protection Specialist, and Melissa Williams, the World Bank's Senior Rural Development Specialist.
Melissa, I want to start with you and ask you just to give us a kind of brief, broad chronological account of how this crisis has unfolded. We got a bit of it in that video there, but maybe you can explain a bit more about how this plague has unfolded.
The Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations explained today that this really started about 2 years ago, and it started with a very rare cyclone that hit in the Arabian Peninsula. That created a bloom of vegetation that allowed the locust to population to grow out of control. They were hit by yet another cyclone, which allowed an explosion of the locust, and that continued to grow through 2018. By June of 2019, the locust had landed into the Horn of Africa, particularly Somalia and Ethiopia. There were some control measures, but then another cyclone hit the Horn of Africa, creating even more water and vegetation, allowing the population to grow. By December, at the end of December, they had entered Kenya, and they have proceeded into Uganda, now South Sudan. They had even touched into Tanzania and Democratic Republic of the Congo for a few weeks.
It's fascinating, that interplay between the cyclones and how that's affected these insect populations, and just the scale, the geographic scale you're talking about there. Afra, I just want to turn to you, and maybe you can give us a sense of just how many people are being affected by these swarms.
Thank you, Paul. I'm very pleased to be part of this conversation. If we only look at the Horn of Africa, there are already around 22 million people who are severely food insecure. So a crisis that, like the locust, will only exacerbate the situation. According to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, there will be additional 3 million farmers and 500,000 pastoralists who will be added to people who are severely insecure. Now, these numbers are also likely to increase over the coming months, and that's because the control of the locust is likely to require a number of months, if not a number of seasons, to bring it down to a manageable level. Now, to make things worse, most of the countries affected by the locust are also countries who are experiencing multiple shocks. We have, of course, the COVID-19 shock, but also this region is also experiencing shocks of floods, and some countries are also going through conflict. So what we can say from all of these situations is that lives and livelihoods of millions of people in the region and beyond are really at a stake.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, one of the things that makes it so tragic is a lot of people already food insecure there, more people potentially becoming food insecure because of this. Melissa, I just want to jump back to you. What has, you know, this plague meant in terms of that supply of food for ordinary people living in the affected areas so far?
Okay. Well, we know that it's already doing damage to crops, and assessments are ongoing. One thing that we have to point out is that it's difficult to do the assessments in some of these areas because of the conflict situation that are also present in these areas. Now, based on the numbers that we've seen, we have run some damage estimates, and we project that the damages and losses to agriculture and livestock in 2020 in East Africa and Yemen alone will be about $8.5 billion. Wow. So, and that is a significant impact on the food supply.
It's not just the food supply that is threatened here. Of course, it's many people's livelihoods, people who are connected to whether it's farming or other industries. Could you, you know, give us a sense about the economic impact, about the impact on jobs specifically that is concerning you now as this plague unfolds?
Yeah, that's right. So this is really a dual shock situation. Beside a food security shock, there is also an economic shock, and jobs are significantly impacted. The regions that are impacted by the locusts do rely heavily on the agriculture sector for employment. So millions of people rely on their livelihood as well as jobs on this sector. And we can think of two broad sort of categories of people whose jobs are impacted. On the one hand, we have people, families who depend on their direct produce of crops and livestock for income generation, farmers, herders. But also there's a wide range of people who earn wages and have jobs in the supply chain that is linked to the agriculture sector. This is people like wage farmers, transporters, traders. So really a wide range of jobs have been and will continue to be impacted. The challenge is that people have really limited and alternatives. And that's because the job market is very strained because of the COVID-19 as well as the other crises that are unfolding in these countries. And that makes social protection measures really a very vital alternative for these people.
And Melissa, I kind of had this question I wanted to ask you is, you know, swarms of locusts have been recorded in some of these areas for centuries. Why do you think, what's the research telling you of why it's reached a crisis point this year?
That's a great question, because it's a toxic mix of climate change and then conflict and fragility. So I mentioned that you had the two cyclones hit the Arabian Peninsula, very rare event. And then another cyclone hit the Horn of Africa. And then in general, in the Horn of Africa, we've had an exceptional rainy seasons, consecutive high rainy seasons. You know, this has allowed the populations to explode because it's created the vegetation they need to feed and grow. At the same time, some of the first mover countries, the countries that would be the first to move to control the populations, are caught up in conflict right now. The first one is Yemen. That was the first domino to fall because they just couldn't put the control operations in place in time to control it. Then to come over to when the swarms come over, they're hitting Somalia, which is also still building back from decades of conflict. So you have this toxic mix that has led to the conditions for just what we're calling now an upsurge of the population of locusts. And the fear is that without the appropriate control by the end of the year, it will be officially a plague of locusts, which is the worst condition of locust population.
And it sounds like there's a lot of kind of compounding factors here. You talked about conflict, there's the ongoing pandemic, there's a bunch of stuff that must make responding to and researching the swarm quite difficult. I wanted to also ask, you know, on that, you know, how has the fight against the coronavirus pandemic affected the response to the locusts?
It's had some significant effects. One, because it's really, COVID has shut down the trade channels. So the equipment that they need and the insecticides that they need in order to fight these swarms are not getting to them in time. Also, the international experts and the extra labor come in and end up being quarantined. They're trying to move helicopters from South Africa to Somalia to help in the surveillance. It was going to take over 26 days because in every country where the helicopter stopped, they would have to go through 13 days of quarantine. So the helicopter pilots actually, whenever they landed, never left their helicopters, slept on the tarmac, woke up, took off again to the next country so that they could reduce it from 26 days to 3 days. So people are taking extraordinary measures to try and move it forward despite all of the constraints.
Just massively complicating that response effort there.
Yes.
Could you just tell us a little bit about why the effects of this could be felt for years on out and how long do you think they'll be felt?
Right. No, I think it, again, it is because we are in a situation on these countries are really experiencing multiple of shocks. But also it will be a factor of how quickly and speedy countries will be able to control the locust. I think Melissa can speak into that. But I think giving that multiplicity of crises that these countries are experiencing, protecting of lives and livelihoods is going to continue to be really needed for years to come.
And Melissa, could you just talk to us a little bit about why the locusts will stick around for more than one season, that it's not just something that's going to be contained to 2020?
Well, essentially, they're in such large numbers now that control is very difficult. They're in breeding in remote areas and breeding in areas that are not traditional areas. So new nymphs and hopper bands, the younger at their younger stages, are emerging in places that are not normally breeding areas, making it very difficult to control. I can tell you that the last big upsurge in Africa was in 2003, and it lasted for 2 years, and that was in West Africa. So I think we can easily anticipate this will go on for at least another year.
Afra, I just want to turn back to you now and start to talk a little bit about some of the solutions that we can take to address the effects of this swarm that is sweeping across these regions. Can we just explore a little bit about how, you know, the support that your team in that $500 million program, how that will be used? I understand that, you know, things like social safety nets, like cash transfers will be a key element. You're the senior social protection specialist here. Can you tell us a little bit more about that component of the program and how it will affect those that have been affected by the locust swarms?
Yeah, no, you're right. The social safety net is a central part of the overall solution that this program offers countries to address the impact of the locust crisis. Because social safety nets, by design and by sort of objective, they protect lives and livelihood. The program provides a range of emergency assistance in the form of cash transfers, as well as employment generation through cash for work for works intervention. It also cash transfers have a lot of evidence from previous crises that they play a very critical role in enhancing the purchasing power of households. In crisis, people are able, with cash assistance, they're able to meet their basic needs, food and basic assistance. They're able also to continue to seek urgent services. We also see time and time that at times also they protect productive livelihood of households if otherwise would be sold to meet the basic needs. In addition to this immediate and sort of emergency assistance that helps people smooth consumption and meet basic needs, the program also offers packages of seeds and fodders to farmers and pastoral communities. This will enable affected communities to rehabilitate their livelihood as well as recover quickly.
Supporting people to bolster economies and preserve human capital there. Melissa, I want to get you back in the mix now and ask, you know, agriculture in many countries has been decimated by the locust swarms already. How will this program help with the longer term recovery, you know, as the swarms start to die down?
Okay, thanks. Yes, And, you know, just to reiterate, while the crisis is ongoing, the social safety nets are critical to keep the houses stable so that they don't sell off their assets. In terms of the both livestock and agricultural production, we'll be coming in with seed packets and trying to introduce improved seed varieties, you know, take advantage of the crisis and bring in some hardier varieties of food and diverse seeds for production so that these farmers can resume production as quickly as possible. And this will be supplemented with a basket of inputs to help with that production. Also, where needed, emergency fodder, because we need to maintain the nutrition of the animals and the health of the animal population in the area. And then help the our clients, you know, restore the pasture and rangelands to productivity. And, you know, the idea is to build back better, build back the production ecosystem, restore the pollinator populations, build up the plant, the fauna base or flora base, so that it can be a productive landscape once again. Right now, locusts come in and they will eat every bit of photosynthetic material that they can. And that we need to help them build that back as quickly as possible.
Afra Alamadi and Melissa Williams, thank you so much for being here.
Well, as we wrap up here, I just want to open our inbox real quick. As many of you will know, at the end of each episode, we invite anyone listening to send us questions or send your feedback. Well, we got a question, and I want to take the opportunity to answer it. It was sent to us from Antonio Reyes in London. We asked him to record his question, so let's just take a quick listen.
Hi, Paul and Raka. My name is Antonio Reyes. I'm from Mexico, but I'm currently living in London, finishing my PhD in political science at University College London. I was hoping you guys could give us some more information about the World Bank's Young Professionals Program. So, you know, what the program is in general and how the process works. Thank you very much.
Well, to get Antonio an answer and to learn more, I reached out to Ya Opong, who is the program manager for the Young Professionals, and asked her to give us some details.
Well, it's always exciting to hear that there's interest in joining the World Bank Group, especially the Young Professionals Program. And here's what I can tell you briefly about the Young Professionals Program. It really is a great way for people under the age of 32 who have relevant education and professional experience to start a career at the World Bank Group. And the exciting thing is that the program has gone through some changes recently and now recruits on behalf of three of our institutions, the World Bank, IFC, and MIGA. And we really train future leaders to collaborate effectively across the institution and really urge them to find joint solutions to the development challenges that we face. It's a highly competitive process, undoubtedly, but once in the program, young professionals are offered a unique 2-year professional development curriculum and a 5-year employment contract. If you or someone else you know might fit the bill and are interested in exploring the YPP, applications are now open until the end of June. And they will reopen again for roles at the IFC and MIGA in August. So please do check out our website. And for additional information, including our brochure, including some FAQs, you'll find us at www.worldbank.org/YPP.
Thanks, Ya. And a huge thanks to Antonio for sending us his question. You can also find out more information about the Young Professionals Program by checking out our Behind the Mission series on World Bank Live. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And of course, you can send us your questions at thedevelopmentpodcast@worldbank.org. So that helicopter story, it was just incredible to me. I think it really underlines, at least to me, how COVID is making other crises around the world even worse.
Absolutely. You know, the locusts are obviously already a crisis on their own. And now we've got crisis alongside crisis with coronavirus. And it's all just costing lives and livelihoods around the world.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I suppose that's it for this edition of the Development Podcast. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to us, whatever platform you do like to listen to us on. That could be Apple Podcasts, Spotify. There's a tons of other platforms out there that we're on. So please do Subscribe so you never miss an episode.
And as always, we would love your feedback. Please email me, Paul, the rest of the team. We're all available at thedevelopmentpodcast@worldbank.org.
Until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye.